ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. We're on chapter 5, verse 6. Sannyasastu Mahabaho, Sannyasastu Mahabaho, Dukamaptum Aptum Ayogataha, Dukamaptum Ayogataha, Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma, Yoga Yukto Munir Brahma. Nachirena tikachati. Sannyasaha tu mahabaho dukam aptum ayogataha yoga yuktaha munihi brahma nachirena adhikachati. So, the Lord Krishna is continuing here. Remember, if you remember last week, there are so many verses where he's differentiating sannyasa, the taking of sannyasa, from staying in the world and practicing karma yoga. And so that differentiation now, he's still continuing with that. So he says, sannyasa hatu mahabaho. Mahabaho means one who has great arms, very strong. Right? So, as he's addressing Arjuna in that way. So, hey Arjuna, sannyasa, dukkham optum is very difficult to attain. Optum is an infinitive of purpose, optum. Dukkham optum, difficult to gain. Sannyasa is difficult to gain. Ayogataha, without yoga, without karma yoga. And so here, he says, sannyasa here means you can take it either way. Sannyasa in terms of, if you were to, remember there's the two lifestyles. To take the sannyasa lifestyle without karma yoga, without having a karma yoga buddhi, that's very difficult to live happily because your mind is going to be always after fulfilling, as we'll see in later verse, going after kama. I need this and I need this and I need this. And at the same time you've kind of cut away from your lifestyle all of the things that you need, you know, all of the field of experience that you need in order to fulfill your desires. And so to go to that sannyasa lifestyle before your mind is contemplative and just ready, satisfied and desiring, you can look at it like this, but when we look at just the two lifestyles, to take sannyasa successfully to really be able to enjoy wearing the orange and living that very kind of limited lifestyle where all of your life is focused just on study and the other activities really are not included in the vows that you've taken. Because sannyasa, you're taking vows. That should be a great relief for you. Your mind should think, should feel, now I'm getting to do exactly what I love to do, what I want to do, is just to contemplate and be with this knowledge and study and be with my own nishta. This is the fulfillment of, this is the direction that my mind is going in. Those are my desires, right? Is to do that. And my mind isn't engaged in a lot of raga dvesha. A lot of raga dvesha means the different likes and dislikes. Now, likes and dislikes, this is an important thing to understand. Likes and dislikes also has to do with how I relate to others in my environment. Because that's a problem also when you're into a limited environment and there's a few people in it. You know, in order for me to be able to contemplate and study, I need you to be like this and I need you to be like that. And why are you like that and why are you like that? Because kind of you can get into a very petty kind of cauldron, you know. Yeah. So that titiksha has to be there. Titiksha requires vairagya. Titiksha means my ability to accommodate all of the differences, all of the different polar opposites that are going on in the world, and to be able to give space to the world and to the people in the world, the people in my environment, to be their imperfect selves, and for me to be my imperfect self, and for all of this type of stuff to be going on. Otherwise, you can say, you know, my, I just want to live a contemplative life, but then there's these damn mosquitoes, and this person is acting like this, and that. You know what I mean? And so the environment just will not allow me to live my contemplative life. That's raga dvesha. That's a raga dvesha. And so that's why you can think, you know, that your mind is ready for that type of meditative space. But you have to have that meditative space here. It's best to have the meditative space here in the midst of all of the opposites, in the midst of your life. Because that means that you're able to accommodate all of the opposites and all of the ups and downs of life. You know, and so this is exactly what he's saying. He says, sannyasa, now in terms of lifestyle, the sannyasa lifestyle, it is very difficult to attain that, to really be comfortable in that lifestyle without yoga. A yogataha means without that karma yoga buddhi. That has that ishvara arpana buddhi. Ishvara arpana buddhi means I'm not doing my intent in terms of how I am responding to the environment. It's not so that I can fulfill my desire. That's not where my value system is. It's not that so that I can get my way. The value system that I have is toward antakarana shuddhi, toward that I follow dharma. I see dharma and ishvara as one and the same, actually. Dharma just means the order of the creation. And so I try in the situation to do my... What is dharma? What is my dharma in the situation? And I do that as... That's my ishvara arpana buddhi. I do that as praise of ishvara or in relationship to ishvara. This is my dharma. That is what I do. This is what's appropriate to do. It's not because I want this or I want that. What I want is antakarana shuddhi. So all of my karma, all of my actions are done with that intent. And so dharma becomes what is the guide for me. Because what I'm seeking is antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, so that I can have jnana nishtha. So that's what drives me. That's the karma yoga buddhi. And so that karma yoga buddhi, if I'm living that out in the middle of my life, then I have plenty of things, plenty of situations where I can be working on myself and neutralizing my likes and dislikes, my raga dvesha. In a sannyasi lifestyle, that all becomes much more limited. So he says, so this is one interpretation. Both interpretations are correct, it's just one level. Without that karma yoga buddhi, it's very difficult to live that sannyasi lifestyle happily. It will create just a lot of agitation and strife. And Brahma Prakash Ananda said, sure, you just have to, you know, people will just go and sleep. They'll just go to sleep. Sleep all day long. Right? Because there's nothing to do. Right? There's nothing to do, you know. So just sleep, you know. At that time. It's a joke, but there's some truth in it also. When you just get bored and you don't know what to do with yourself, you don't want to study the books, and you don't feel like contemplating, and you're agitated about this and that. Very difficult to do. That's one thing. The other is the word sannyasa, sarvakarma sannyasa, is also equated with Brahman and with jnanam, right? So sannyasa, that sannyasa buddhi, is jnanam, having knowledge, recognizing aham brahmasmi, myself, the Atma, is akarta. Akarta means I am not a doer, right? There is no action. I am free. My being is free from all action. And so to recognize for my buddhi, for my mind, to know, to recognize, to gain nishtha, to become rooted in this sarvakarma sannyasa where I recognize my being is free from action. I am. I'm akarta. I am not a doer. I'm not a bhokta. I'm not an enjoyer. That's not my swarupa. So to become awake to that, for my mind to really recognize it, I need that karma yoga buddhi. Because there needs to be to really recognize myself as akarta, a non-doer, that the atma is always the same, is free from any type of modification or change. to be able to really recognize that this doership, that I am a karta, I am a doer, has to be neutralized. It can't be neutralized in a meaningful way when there is raga dvesha, when there are likes and dislikes. Because when there are likes and, that are not neutralized, when there's likes and dislikes, that's what, how that translates is this. I, the jiva, need this in order to be happy. That's a like. I need this. Now I'm a jiva in the creation, right? That kartrutva, when that doership is there, I need this in order to be happy. And I hate that thing because it makes me unhappy. That kartrutva is just, it is generated. Kartrutva, doership, and this needing to improve my lot is generated by raga dvesha. In fact, when the raga dvesha, when the likes and dislikes for those moments that we enjoy being without them, at those moments, of course, the mind is not creating pain. That is causing the taking the focus of my attention on that pain. The mind isn't creating pain, and my own swarupa, the ananda, the fullness, which is just not my natural being, is there, and my mind is just happy. And the raga dveshas are not there. The mind is just all is well with me. All is well with me because that is my swarupa. That is my nature. And the raga dveshas, the likes and dislikes, aren't creating havoc that causes my mind to then focus on that, you know, and try to solve it. Solve it how? Because of it. Ajnanam, because of ignorance. Solve it. Let me manipulate the situation so that I can actually fulfill that desire. And then that, to me, that's the solution. But that solution gives such a short-lived shanti. The shanti that solution gives, that needing to fulfill the desire, lasts only until the next desire comes. Right? I get a moment of shanti from fulfilling a desire because at that moment my mind is full. It doesn't want to do anything because it's fulfilled its desire, so it's complete. At that moment I don't want anything. No raga, no dvesha. Just think about it. The moment you fulfill a desire, at that moment, no raga or dvesha because you just got what you wanted. The mind is the jnani's mind at that time. You're whole. You're complete. That's the experience. It lasts until the next vritti raises its head. And that next vritti will be, oh no, how can I keep that situation? Or that situation or that person or that accomplishment could leave. You know? So that's one thing that can happen. Or that will very frequently happen. Or another thing that would happen is that desire comes and now all is well with me, and then you think, how can I improve that? If I could just have this now and this, that would really secure that. Everything would be much better. So it goes on. That's how the mind goes on. This is all illusion. It's all delusion. It's all illusion. It's all the illusion, the maya, right? Born of ajnanam. And so in order for one to gain jnana nishta, in this knowledge, sannyasa, in terms of knowledge, we have to neutralize these raga dveshas. In the karma yoga buddhi, where the kartrutvam, this doership, the sense of doership is still there, but now I am, because I am a mumukshu, because I am seeking knowledge, as well as the sannyasi lifestyle, both are seeking knowledge, and I'm exposed to Shravana. I'm exposed to this teaching, and that is what I'm doing as a mumukshu, right? As a jignyasu, that is what I'm doing, is trying to gain knowledge. Then my approach to this creation and to the raga dveshas and to all of the things that are going on in samsara is much, much different. Now my focus is on antakarna shuddhi. That is my desire. There is a desire. The desire is antakarna shuddhi, that I get some purity of mind so that I can gain this knowledge. That's the focus. And then how do I handle the world as it presents itself to me? Dharma first. I see Dharma and Ishwara are one and the same thing. So what is primary to me is that my behavior is appropriate. It's kaushal and is appropriate to the situation. And that becomes primary for me, and that is my relationship. The relationship to Dharma is the relationship to Ishwara. Because right, the infinite order, that is the Dharma. So Ishwara and Dharma, in a sense, are one and the same. And so my relationship to Dharma is my relationship to Ishwara. And then with that, I have that antakarana, shuddhi buddhi, for purity of mind. And the reason, why do I want purity of mind? So that my mind is available to gain this knowledge, to recognize that which is beyond Dharma and Adharma. The Atma, the ananda of the Atma, is beyond Dharma Adharma. It's beyond sukha dukkha, pleasure pain. The swarupa, the ananda, the fullness of yourself, is way beyond pleasure pain. It's the ananda that illumines the pain, the ananda that illumines the pleasure pain. That's the ananda that we have to discover. But to discover that, I have to neutralize some of this activity that's going on in my mind. And so that karma yoga buddhi is very necessary there. So Krishna says, this sannyasa, whether it's a lifestyle, difficult to live without that karma yoga buddhi, or whether it's the jnanam itself, if the karma yoga buddhi is not there, it's very, very hard to attain. So he says, whereas he says, yoga yuktaha munihi brahma na chirena adigacchati. He says, the one who's yoga yuktaha, the one who has that karma yoga buddhi, you know, the one who has that attitude, right, that neutralizes these raga dveshas. So the yogi yukta, the one who has that karma yoga buddhi, who is a munihi. Munihi means the mind, the buddhi, is capable of doing manana, reflection, is capable of shravana, manana, nididhyasana, is capable of thinking, you know, of contemplating, of understanding all of this, of thinking all of this through. So that one, the munihi, who is capable of this type of reflection, this viveka, this type of thinking things through, that munihi, who is yoga yuktaha, who has the karma yoga buddhi, brahma adigacchati, that person, nachirena, in a short time, nachirena means not, it actually is a negative, it says, not in a long time, not in a long time, that person gains Brahman. Gains Brahman means what? Gains this knowledge. Gains this knowledge. Because to gain the knowledge that your mind has to be available for it. Right? Your mind has to be there. And so for the mind to be there, to have some shanti, there might be running out here and running out there. Mind needs some shanti in order to gain this knowledge and to hold it. Remember I talked about the paper bag? Mm-hmm. Right? The newspapers? It's what that example Swamiji uses. Your mind is like newspaper. If you bring your newspaper mind to the guru, to the teacher, who's going to drop the coals of knowledge, you know, the burning embers of knowledge, into the newspaper mind, the burning embers of knowledge just burn right through it, and so that newspaper mind has to become like a cast iron cauldron. That when those burning embers of knowledge are put into it, that mind is available to hold it. You know, and so that requires this karma yoga buddhi. And that karma yoga buddhi requires viveka. The viveka and the vairagya. Karma yoga buddhi is, who would have, see, the karma yoga buddhi is not going to be there for samsari who thinks that I can satisfy myself. I can become whole and complete through the fulfillment of my desires. I want this to be happy so I can be happy. I want this so I can be happy. One who believes that person is not an adhikari. Right? They haven't seen through that yet, so they won't be interested in this knowledge. The person who's seen through that has some viveka and the vairagya, the dispassion that's born through that viveka, then all of these habitual ways of being in the world, habitual desires, wanting to manipulate the world to create some happiness for myself, in spite of seeing the fallacy of all of that, my mind continues to act that way. So Arjuna will say to the Lord, what can I do about that? Karma yoga buddhi. He understands that completely because the mind for beginningless lifetimes has only been seeking to fulfill yourself by fulfilling desires in the world. And so you come and expose yourself to knowledge and you see it over and ago, shravana over and over, and you see it, but the mind is habitually acting in this way. And so what is the best way to give the mind up the proper environment, because you're gaining knowledge, you're exposed to knowledge, right? Shravana is going on, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana is going on. But what is the most conducive way to be in the world with my knowledge in such a way that the mind will burn out these vasanas or samskaras that are based in ajnanam, right? What is, and that's what Krishna teaches as this karma yoga buddhi. So that's what he's been talking about all of this time. So he says, for the one who has this yoga, that for that person, and it doesn't matter whether the person's a sannyasi, they still have to have that yoga, that karma yoga buddhi. So once a person has that karma yoga buddhi, has neutralized and brought about that neutralization of likes and dislikes so that there's some relative shanti, that person very, very quickly will gain this knowledge because the mind is available for it. Let's go to the next verse. Talks more about it. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Vijitatma jitendriyaha. Vijitatma jitendriyaha. Sarvabhutatma bhutatma. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvannapi na lipyate lipyate kurvannapi na lipyate. He says yoga yuktaha vishuddha atma vijita atma jitta indriyaha sarva bhuta atma atma bhuta atma kurvan api nalipyate. He says, now the one who, because he's just said that person will gain this knowledge very, not in a long time, quickly, okay? The one who is yoga yuktaha, the one who has this karma yoga buddhi, right? Vishuddhatma, and having the karma yoga buddhi, you know, where my relationship is with Ishvara as dharma, really, right? And everything I do is with that karma yoga, that prasada buddhi. Prasada buddhi means all of the results of my actions I take as prasad from the Lord. And I understand the order, I see the order of this, I see that there's an intelligent order to this creation which we call dharma, and I try to live in harmony with that dharma, and that's living in harmony with Ishvara, living in relationship to Ishvara, and I accept the results of my action as coming from Ishvara as what we call karma pala dhata. The karma pala dhata is the one who gives the results of karma. It's not as though I, as a jiva, am the karma pala dhata. I perform the karma. But I can't say, if I could be the one who gives the results of the actions, then we're in Swargaloka, in a sense, right? I'm the great controller of my karma, then, because I control not only the action, but the result. But I don't control the result. That's the problem. That's why we have dukkha, right? As we do these things, wanting these particular results, and we don't get it how we want it, right? That's because there's an infinite order, and I'm just one member, one small part of that infinite order. And so I respect that infinite order as Ishvara, and I accept the results of my actions as being from Ishvara, as karmapaladatta, as that infinite order. And I try to be in this creation in a way that is respectful of Ishvara, and Ishvara in terms of dharma. And so I view dharma and Ishvara as one and the same, you know. And so my relationship with Ishvara is also my relationship with dharma. So that's very beautiful. Swamiji, in his bhasha that you should have a handout up to the chapter 5, he's actually talked about, as I'm talking about it now, he's talked about this quite a bit in his commentary. It's very, very nice the way he talks about it. So here, yoga yuktaha, that karma yoga buddhi, will lead to vishuddha atma. Vishuddha atma means, vishuddha means purity. Here, Atma means mind. That leads to purity of mind. Purity of mind is the neutralization of raga dvesha, right? Likes and dislikes. So the karma yoga buddhi itself will make you a Vishuddhatma, someone whose mind is pure. And that purity of mind, that neutralization of raga dvesha, leads to vijita atma. Vijita atma means dhamma, shama dhamma. Dhamma is the ability to vijita. Vijita means control. The control of the atma, control of the body. So here atma is being used as body. The first one, atma, is used as the mind. You know, the control of myself in reference to the mind. Control of myself as a physical body, right? And so to be able to control my actions. And then the next one is jitendriya, to control my organs of action, to control my sense organs. It means that I have a choice. See, the person that has neutralized your likes and dislikes, you have a choice. You can say no to whatever impulses might be there. If there is a desire that is something that is not good for you, you can say no. If there's a behavior that you're starting to have a tendency to go toward, you can say no. If your mind is thinking in a particular way or starting to rev up, you can say no, that's not the best way. You have a choice. You can say yes also. It's fine that to be able to say yes if you can say no. The problem is that often we can't say no. The body, the mind, the sense organs, the organs of action, they decide. It's not that I can choose, or that I have the distance between these impulses, you know, the distance to make the objectivity to make a choice. And so here, what he's saying is the yoga yukta, the one that has the karma yoga buddhi, has neutralized the raga dvesha, and that person becomes somebody whose mind is vishuddhatma, free from raga dvesha, and that means that person then has control of their body, has control of their karmendriyas, their organs of action, and of their sense organs. And such a person means then, who sees sattva, but then what? So now, see, he's kind of built up now. So this person now is a sannyasi. Whether they're living a life of karma yoga or they're wearing orange, that person has the mind of a sannyasi. That person then is an adhikari, is ready for this knowledge. So the person who has that knowledge, then their mind is ready for knowledge, they're gaining knowledge, then how, because they're exposed to this teaching, then how do they see themselves? Such a person, sarva bhutatma bhutatma. The Bhagavad Gita has many different places where it says something similar to this. Sarva bhutatma. Sarva means all. Sarva Bhuta, all beings. The Atma, the self of all beings, Sarva Bhuta, Atma, Bhutatma. The one whose Atma, Bhuta, the first Bhuta reading backwards, the one whose Atma, Bhuta, has become the Atma in all beings. So that one sees, I see my being, I see myself, who I am. I am the self in all beings. This I that I am is the I that you are, is the I that the cat is the I that the dog is the I that the mosquito is the I that the universe is the I that Ishwara is. Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma. Shankara in his Bhasha, he says, Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma means I am the Atma of Brahmaji, Brahma Vishnu Shiva, right? Of all of Brahmaji, of Vishnu, of Shiva, of Ishwara, I'm the Atma of that, beginning with Brahmaji and ending with Stamba Paryanta, ending with just a clump of grass. I'm the Atma of the clump of grass. Beginning with Brahmaji, the Creator, and ending with a clump of grass, or some will say, ending with a little worm. Right? Just take what is the lowliest thing you can think of. I am the Atma of that. I am the Atma of Brahmaji, the Creator. I am the Atma of the lowliest little piece of the cloud of grass. So, I am the Atma, this Atma that I am. I am the Atma that is the self of all beings, the very self of Ishwara. Ishwara himself. let alone every part of Ishvara. So the one who sees, whose identity, if I were to say who I am the self who is the self of all beings. He says, that person is the Sarvakarma sannyasi. That is the true sannyasi. That sannyasi has nothing to do with taking orange. That person, he says, kurvan napi na lupyate, even though doing action, kurvan api, present participle kurvan, even though doing actions, na lupyate, is not stained, is not touched. It's the idea. Lipyate means stained. But the idea is, even though doing actions, that person is not touched, is not touched in any way. That's the Sarvakarma sannyasi, the one who, no matter what I am doing, what I am thinking, what I am feeling, what I am engaged in, there's nothing touching myself. Myself who is the self of all beings. And so now he gives a very, very famous verse that this is the one that we kind of make fun of sometimes in its misinterpretation. Let's do this verse, number 8. Naiva kinchit karomi ti, naiva kinchit karomi ti, yukto manyeta tatvavit, yukto manyeta tatvavit, pashyan srinvan sprishan jigran. Pashyam srimvan sprishan chigran, ashnan gachan swapanshwasan, ashnan gachan swapanshwasan, pralap, we've got to do the next one too, pralapan visrajan grinnan, pralapan visrajan grinnan, unmishan nimishan napi, unmishan nimishan napi, indriyan indriyarteshu, indriyan indriyarteshu vartanta iti dharayan, vartanta iti dharayan, na eva kinchit karomi iti yuktaha manyeta tatvavit pashyan shrinvan sprishan jigran ashnan gachan swapan shwasan pralapan visrajan grihnan unmishan nimishan api indriyani indriya arteshu vartante iti dharayan. He says, this person, son of a bhutatma, bhutatma, who sees I am the self of all beings, thinks like this. He considers himself like this. Na eva kinchit karomi iti. I don't do anything. Na eva kinchit. Na eva kinchit karomi. Na eva kinchit karomi. I never do anything. I never do anything. Iti the yuktaha somji. Swamiji's come up with a way of translating this yukta. He goes, for yuktaha, the person who is together, the one who is together. But the idea is the one who is together in the sense that the karma, the raga dveshas have been neutralized, and so they have control over their mind. Right? The raga dveshas neutralized in the mind, they have control over their body and over their sense organs, so they have a, they're the ones that make a decision. So they are a person who is in control of their faculties. Right? They can say yes or no to their faculties. That person is a yuktaha. That person is a together person, he says. So that yuktaha, who is a tatvavit. Tatvavit means one who knows the truth. The yuktaha, who is together, that person who is a tatvavit, who knows the truth. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma, that I am the self of all beings. That person knows, I don't do anything. Na eva kinchit karomi. I don't do anything. He is very clear that his being does not do anything. Then he says, pashyan, seeing. See, even though, we'll get to that epi at the very end of this. Even though, even while, seeing, hearing, pashyan, seeing, shrinvan, hearing, sprishan, touching, jikran, smelling, ashnan, eating, gachan, going, swapan, sleeping, shwasan, breathing, pralapan, talking, visurajan, the opposite of grasping, or letting, opening your hands and letting things go, visurjan, grinan is the opposite, grasping and letting go, grinan, unmishan, blinking, opening your eyes, unmishan, opening up your eyelids, nimishan, closing your eyelids. So unmishan, nimishan means blinking, opening and closing your eyelids. Even that, all those things, right, in spite of doing, while doing, it's while doing, these are present participles, while doing all of these things, the tattvavit, the one who knows the truth, he knows, I am not doing anything. I am not doing anything. Then he says, indriyani indriyarteshu vartante. It is the indriyas, the organs of action. Indriyas means organs, like sense organs, or organs of action. It is the organs of action and the sense organs that are existing. They are there, right? It is the organs of action and sense organs that are there, vartante, amidst their sense objects, right? It's the organs of action and or sense organs that are there existing with along with their sense objects. This is where all of the this is the activity that is taking place. This all has to do with the upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, all of these things, the organs of action, the one who is talking, the one who is sleeping, the one who is walking, the one who is seeing, the one who is touching, the one who is smelling, the one who is doing all of the activities that a human being, these body, mind, sense organs can do. These are all of the upadhis. The upadhis, right? They all exist within the within Maya. The Atma, myself, I'm not doing anything. This Atma that I am the same, the self in all beings. And so if I'm the self in all beings and I'm doing something, then you should all be doing it. Right? If I'm the self in all beings and I am at the same time doing all of these things, really doing them, then if I'm blinking, you should be blinking. Right? If I'm smelling, you should be smelling. If I'm thinking, you should be thinking. But that isn't so, because the Atma, your being, doesn't do anything, right? The being that I am doesn't do anything. The I am the very being, the very consciousness, because of which all of these things, and the self that all of these things have for their being, but myself, is actionless. And so that is aproksha. For the one who is aproksha, for that, aproksha means that is self-evident. The stillness, the quietude, the changelessness of me amidst all of this change is I am awake to that. Viveka. I have differentiated that stable, the stable self that is the self of the body, the self of the mind, the self of the sense organs, the self of the organs of action, the very conscious being that all of these things enjoy, that as these things are moving, I don't move, right? I am their self. I am their self. Without them, they don't exist. But I'm not dependent on them. So that is what I'm awake to. And so the jnani, the tattvavit, and the one who has recognized this, can say, and does say, doing all of this, I don't do anything. Yeah? But now, this is where, remember, I mean, this verse is so often misunderstood. Because you will think of it, like, say if I say, the jnani is the one who is seemingly doing all of these things, but really not doing them. And so you as the person looking upon this tattvavit, this jivanmukta, can say, you know, they seem to be talking to me, but they're really not. They seem to be looking at me, but they're really not looking at me. In other words, there's really nobody home. They're totally dissociated. You think that they're engaged in something, but they're really not. Right? So that's really a very odd misunderstanding of this verse. And it kind of puts you and everybody else out of ever the possibility of ever getting knowledge if you think that's what it is. So not what is meant. It's not a possibility. as long as this upadhi is there, the upadhi, upadhi means the conditioning adjunct to this body, mind, sense organs, this upadhi has, you know, the maya itself has a substrate reality, which is the Atman, just like the pot has the substrate reality of the clay. What is it actually there is the clay. It can't be away from the clay. But the clay is not the pot, that type of thing. This body, mind, sense organs is not away from my changeless, the changelessness of my being, my changeless being. My changeless being is itself. But have you differentiated the satya mitya, that this body, mind, sense organs, where all of this activity, all of this maya is taking place, right? That the activity, all of the activity, the seeing, the talking, the smelling, the tasting, all of the activity is taking place within the maya, right? The eyes are seeing forms, the ears are hearing sound, but the conscious being, which is the self of all of this activity, is not performing a function, right? Because all of these functions, the seer as well as the seen, the talker as well as the, you know, the what is being said, all of this duality is something that is illumined by awareness, right? The seer itself is illumined by awareness. The hearer is illumined by awareness, right? Every activity or every perception that takes place itself is illumined by awareness. When these activities come and go, but the awareness remains the same. So that luminary, the conscious me that is there, isn't engaged in the activity. It's the consciousness because of which the activity takes place. So this is what I have to recognize. I need to recognize the stability of my being, the stability of my own presence, this me, that amidst all of my doing, I am not doing anything. I have to be able to say, doing all of this, I am not doing anything. So I have to own both. From the standpoint of the upadhi, I am doing all of this. I am seeing, I am hearing, etc. Because the upadhis are functioning. And at the same time, I have to say and recognize through my own aparoksha jnana, my own direct appreciation, that even while I'm talking right now, I'm recognizing that I'm not saying anything. As I'm saying this, I'm recognizing I'm not saying anything. As you're hearing this, you should be recognizing that you are hearing it, and at the same time, you're not hearing anything. The Atma, yourself, is not performing any type of function whatsoever. You are just pure being, pure, changeless me. And it is that me that is the Swarupa Ananda. It is that pure, changeless me that is Ananda. And my mind's discovery of this, the Ananda, this changeless, the Ananda which is me, then that mind, staying home, keeping always reveling, enjoying the stability of itself, engages, it being part of maya, engages in maya. But the mind is part of maya. So the mind is part of maya, engages in maya. Like another way I can say it, the mind is part of Ishvara, engages in Ishvara. Sense organs is part of Ishvara, engage in Ishvara. It's just that reveling in Ishvara, reveling in Ishvara because the mind is rooted and in the stability of myself, which it doesn't have to worry about at all. Stability of myself is not something that can become unstable. That's the great thing about it. Your being can't change. You can't just decide, oh, I'm so tired of being stable. I think I too will become unstable. It can't do that. And because it can't do that, it is infinite, changeless. And so because it is incapable of degradation or of changing its mind and running away from you, incapable of escape, your mind has found, you know, its own peace, its own stability. Because what is peace itself, shanti itself, can't run away from you. So that is the really the moksha for the mind. The moksha for the mind is the recognition that I, the very self of the mind, am free. The mind, which is mitya, is totally dependent on that wholeness for its being. So the mind also, the mind, the sense organs, the body cannot get away from me. I am their self, like the pot trying to scamper away from the clay. It can't do it. Right? And like that, your mind, no matter what havoc it's creating, it can never get away from the stability of your being. And once it knows that, there is no distance between the ananda of the self and the mind. There's no distance. So all the mind has to do is relax, because it's creating havoc because of ignorance and think it's got to find its wholeness, got lost for a minute in its ignorance. All it has to do is bring in its knowledge and just relax. Right? Even as a samsari, all the samsari has to do is relax. Right? They have to figure out a way to relax. They have to have some mechanism to make them relax. A jnani doesn't have to have a mechanism because you know. You know, the swarupa, the ananda that you're seeking for is your own being. And so because of self-forgetfulness or who God knows why, self-forgetfulness and all these reasons, thousands and thousands of lifetimes of conditioning, your mind forgets itself. It's all right. You just bring it back. There's no distance between what it's seeking and what it's seeking, you know, and the ananda and itself. There's no distance between what it's seeking and itself. The distance is a distance, a false distance brought about by ignorance. And so you have to bring in your knowledge to remove the ignorance that's causing the problem. So, okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Verses in the
Gita? What?
Main non-dualistic verses?
No, there's a lot of them. Like, there's a lot of verses where deceit, and some of these are coming up also. This is a good one. But to see that, to see the akarma in karma. So this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. But it's a really good meditation verse. The way you taught meditation and then the teaching, they just go. It's such a solid verse. that brings out the value of meditation or brings out the quality of meditation. How is it true?
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah, it is true.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you would call that Ananda Swarupa rather than Sat or Chit Ananda Swarupa.
When I say the Swarupa Ananda, often I'll say like Swarupa Ananda, as opposed to Vritti Ananda. Because the Swarupa Ananda, that's the Ananda that's always here as yourself. It doesn't wax or wane. Where Vritti means thought modification. So Vritti Ananda is the, you know, the Ananda that comes and goes in terms of, and it's relative, you know, you can be happier, you can be happier or joyful. You know, there's just a lot of different modifications. That type of Ananda is brought about by different mental modifications, right? But the Swarupa Ananda doesn't come and go. It's not dependent on the vritti. And so that's why right here, right now, fully present, aparoksha, directly, immediately present, not covered as though, say, even there's mental agitation or sadness in your mind or depression or something in the mind, that is not covering it, even when that is there. So with Viveka, you can discern the Swarupa Ananda of your being from whatever mental modification, positive or negative, that is taking place. Even an Ananda Vritti, which is a joyful vritti, bliss, you can differentiate the Swarupa Ananda of your being from that from the bliss that is being generated by the vritti.
What, say that again?
The bliss that is generated by the vritti. Say you fulfilled a desire or something beautiful has happened and your mind is enjoying wonderful bliss, you know, which is a nice experience, but it's an experience that comes and goes. Right, bliss experience comes and goes. That kind of bliss is dependent upon the quality of mind. It's dependent on the vritti. But the self is present, illumining, as the very substance of that vritti. And it is the same self that is illumining and the substance of the dukkha vritti, the sorrowful vritti. And that self's nature is ananda, not the ananda that is reflecting in a quiet mind, that has kind of a bliss experience that you can then be without, right? That bliss is generated by the vritti. It enjoys the ananda. If that ananda is reflecting in the vritti in that particular way, but if the vritti is loses its shanti, then that ananda goes away. But the ananda that is true, that is the very nature of yourself, that doesn't wax or wane. That is always there as your own self experience. An example they use, just to try to really pound this in, because this is very misunderstood. If the sun is shining, right, in a clear water bucket, an agitated water bucket, and a muddy water bucket, right, the reflection of the sun is going to be different in all three water buckets. In the clear water bucket, it will be quite true to the sun. In the muddy water bucket, it's barely even there, right? In a really muddy water bucket. In an agitated water bucket, it's all breaking up. But from the standpoint of the sun, right, it's always the same. It isn't being modified by the state of mind that is causing different types of reflection. This clear state of mind, you know, that reflects the sun purely, is the most comfortable state, because it's the most harmonious, right, with my being. So it's very comfortable, and so it's blissful, that state of mind. But my self-experience is not the mind. My self-experience is the sun. See what I mean? So the me experience is not modified, increased or decreased by these different mental modifications. And that's what I need to discern. That's when we say Svarupananda. And that means that no matter, not that we like painful mind or painful body, of course, we're not going after that. But whether painful mind or painful body, my being remains exactly the same. I remain the same. The I, me. And that's what I need to recognize. You can go about, as you walk through your day, notice whatever the mood happens to be, whatever that you're engaged in, whatever you're doing, just reflect, pull back for a minute, and recognize your own presence, your own being. And notice that it doesn't waver, ever, in any way. And then the mind comes into relationship with that stability.
But you know, when the mind is painful, it doesn't seem that way.
No, because when the mind, that's true, because the mind will naturally focus on the pain and start thinking around the pain. But one good exercise is when your mind is in pain, at that time, take a moment, you know, just relax for a minute and be with that condition and notice yourself. It's not, you're still not going to like the pain.
No.
Right? Because it's painful. But the thing to notice is that to start recognizing that I'm still there in exactly the same way I am when the mind isn't in pain. And then you start realizing that there's a stable, whole self. And then the mind starts relaxing into that stability. You know? What's causing the pain is lack of vairagya. And that's what we have to keep.
Yeah, you know, that's a big remark because it doesn't seem even like it's a. What do you mean by a lack of vairagya?
Well, I can go a little. I can do another layer beyond that, but I will right now. In reference to my day-to-day experience, what makes the mind upset and building up is that I need life to be like this in order for me to be happy. And my fear, also that's what, I need this, I need to be this way in order to be happy. And then another thing that's really unfortunate, but everyone does this, you think of the future and then you think, I need the future to be like this in order to be happy. It's not even here yet. It's not here, but you imagine. It's called different forms of catastrophic thinking. You imagine what could happen in the future, and then you imagine worst-case scenarios, and then if it were to happen like that, then I wouldn't be happy, right? So this is all, this on this level, this is all a vairagya problem, because then you have to bring your mind back to Ishwara, understanding Ishwara, understanding your prarabdha karma, understanding the real source of your ananda. Your mind is never away from that ananda. You have to. That's what they meant in when Shankara talked about the definition of a muni. You know, the muni is the one who sees himself as the self in all beings and who can never is never touched by anything. The muni is the one who's capable of manana. Means doing that reasoning, right? Pulling the mind back from this, getting lost in the samsara like that, to pull it back. So that's the lack of vairagya. And that's not an insult. So, oh, I have a lack of vairagya. We all have lack of vairagya until you have jnana nishtha. Right? That vairagya is something that matures.
But
it matures as your knowledge.
At that time of pain, you hope that by recognizing that I'm changeless and all is well with me, you're hoping the painful mind will go away, but you find that the painful mind still kind of...
No, because you can't do an emotional bypass. You know, what do you call that? You can't do a bypass like that because, say, if something is causing, there's something causing the pain, right? Which is going to be...
painful.
Yes, but it will also have very much to do with the way you are relating to that thing. And that's what we have to work on. Like, I'm relating to the situation in a way that is causing me pain. And it's not enough to just say, I'm Brahman. You have to deal with the problem at the level, even you can bring in your knowledge, but you have to bring in your knowledge to where the problem actually is, and to the attitude and to what is actually causing the pain. And then there's all of our unconscious stuff.
Yeah, 90%.
All the unconscious stuff that we need to have some ability, some understanding of how to deal with that, how to be an inner friend, how to be with that unconscious, hurt, wounded parts. You know, and how to listen to the self-talk. These are all skills that if you have those skills, then you can really help your mind along. Whereas if you don't have a consciousness or some training around in that way, this negative self-talk, well, I'm so stupid or I'm an idiot or whatever it is, this is the problem. That negative or critical self-talk has developed from childhood. And so we don't even know that we're doing it. It's just so natural, you know, for people to be critic or to be harsh on themselves or treat themselves in a way that you would never treat anybody in the world. You put you in prison. You're a madcap, you know, if you're to treat people in the world the way often that you might talk to yourself. Yeah, but because you're doing it from childhood, you don't even realize that there's anything odd about it until somebody points it out. You know, they say, oh my gosh, I would never treat any human being like that. And then you start becoming conscious of what it might mean to your psyche if you were actually kind. And the psyche responds so much to that kindness. The compassion that you have a value for in reference to the rest of the world. When you turn that Swami, you know, you turn that Swami part, you know, the Jnani part, the compassionate part, onto the different parts of yourself that are need help, that are coping and trying to manage in the world. And then that brings a lot of antakarana shuddhi. Just that, kindness, inner kindness, brings so much peace to the mind. So these things, but we need to learn these things.
Carol, I'm trying to understand what you were teaching tonight in terms of everything here is, in creation, is manifest knowledge. So in terms of manifest knowledge versus unmanifest, differentiated versus undifferentiated, and this is where my mind's going, that the mind is nothing but manifest knowledge, which is differentiated knowledge. And I'm wondering if that which reflects and is never doing anything is unmanifest knowledge.
Oh. When Swamiji uses this term manifest knowledge, right? So when I've used it, it's a term that now he's used. He used to use the Samishti Upadhi, means the whole infinite upadhi, is this the Ishwara's upadhi in Maya. But the word manifest knowledge makes it more clear in terms of an expression of consciousness, in a sense, that which is known. You know, we don't think of Brahman in terms of manifest or unmanifest. Brahman is always manifest consciousness. It is never, Brahman is never manifest or unmanifest. It is always conscious being. Mm-hmm. And so when we say manifest knowledge versus unmanifest knowledge is what we call avyakta, when the creation goes into unmanifest condition, because mm-hmm. the creation is cyclical, right? And so when this Maya manifests, then it's in the form of the creation. When it goes into its causal state, then it's unmanifest. Mm-hmm. And we would liken that to, say right now, if I ask you to think of a red rose, then that knowledge, your prior knowledge of red rose, will now manifest in your mind. Right? You'll have that knowledge, that thought will manifest. Whereas before, it was just in unmanifest condition. It was there, but in unmanifest condition. See?
Yeah, I'm just trying to see the differentiation between unmanifest knowledge and, I guess,
in Brahman?
Chaitanya?
Yeah, consciousness. Consciousness, when we're talking about manifest knowledge or unmanifest knowledge, we're only talking about Maya. We're only talking about the creation. So I could say, instead of using those words, I can say, when the creation comes into manifestation, it is the creation comes into manifestation, and then the creation goes into its causal condition. Then it comes into manifestation, goes into causal condition. So when we use manifest, unmanifest, it's only Maya.
Okay, so unmanifest is Maya. Manifest and the unmanifest is Maya. And the Maya is the Shakti that is in Brahman.
That's Satyam Mitya. It is, you know, it is Brahman, but Brahman is not it. That's the Satyam Mitya relationship. And that's why it has no being apart from Brahman. There's nothing there but Brahman. Right? So it is totally dependent on Brahman for its being. That's why we say Brahman is the Adhishtana. Without it, without the Adhishtana, the Mitya can't be. It will have no being. So Brahman is the Adhishtana of the Maya. But the Adhishtana that has no dependence on the Maya. Right? So it's free of Maya, but Maya is not free of it.
Just trying to understand what is, it kind of seems like a silly question, but then what is consciousness if it is not unmanifest knowledge? Is it just luminary?
It's like now, in this self-experience that you're having in the moment that includes this room, includes all your sense perception, your thoughts, your feeling of the body and all of that, there is a common denominator in this experience. And the common denominator is that everything equally has being. So beingness. It is beingness. That, and there's another common denominator, and that is that being, not only is it beingness, it is knownness. In the sense that absolutely everything in your experience, everything without exception, is known. Everything is, and it is known. It may be real or unreal, but say if I say the rope snake, the rope is, and it is known. The illusory snake is, and it is known. It's illusory, but while it's there, it is. It is an illusory snake. So whatever the experience, whether it's illusory or what we call pratibhasika, you know, it means it's subjective. Subjective experiences or the objective experiences, all of them that come into my sphere, they equally exist and they are equally known. Okay? So that common denominator is what we call the Adhishtana. The Maya, if I were to remove the Maya, just hypothetically in your imagination, what is left is the knownness, which is consciousness, and which is isness.
Yes.
Yeah, the isness, the being which is consciousness. And what the whole vision of the Vedanta is, that this being which is consciousness, which is me, that is the me, that is the Adhishtana of the whole Maya. That is the truth of the whole thing. So then I say, I am the truth of the whole thing. That conscious being is totally independent of anything, doesn't require anything for its being. It is the bottom line, right? There's nothing beyond it. There's nothing other than it. There's nothing beyond it. There's nothing above it, below it, to the side of it. There is only that. That is what is. And so that's the... And that is the very being of our experience. That is the conscious being of our experience. And that's what we call Brahman. And the whole teaching is the Mahavakya, you are that. That is who you are.
You can only get to that differentiation between the is known through the logic, because the Maya is always there, so you can never have the is without the known, either manifest or unmanifest. I mean, you could have the unmanifest, the vritti, what is that, unmanifest knowledge, but that's still, that Maya is still there. So the only way you can differentiate the isness from the knownness is through logic.
Not quite. There's a missing thing there. The isness and the knownness are one and the same. Right? Isness and consciousness are the same thing. They're two words. Consciousness is existence, and existence is consciousness.
Right.
Okay. So now, the thing is, can you, your mind, which is Maya, right, differentiate itself from its own satyam. It's like asking...
What?
It's like asking the pot to differentiate itself from the clay. Right? It has to recognize the satyam-mitya relationship between itself, the pot form, and its truth, the clay. Because there's nothing there but clay. Right? But the pot is utilitarian. It's functional. But it doesn't have any being apart from the clay. And the clay is independent of it. So something like that. You have to be able to recognize, okay, here, the conscious me, which cannot be objectified as an object. There's no subject-object relationship, but it's self-evident, self-shining. As all of these, the different upadis, my mind, sense organs, body, all of these things are in constant flux, constant change. Right? And so those, and they're known, they're illumined. They come and go within, and as they come and go, they are and they are known. Okay? But continually changing. There is something, though, illumining them that is not changing. So I can make the differentiation between my being, the self-evident being of myself that never changes, and all of this, these known things that are coming and going that are continually changing. And so now, the changeless amidst the changing, I can, it's not just logic, it's experience. Because the changing is going, the changeless is not, and that's my experience. And then logic will back that experience and say that I can't be what is left because I'm still here. Right? So I experience myself as still here, and I also recognize that things that come and go can't be me because I am there before, during, and after. So if something's gone, not in the experience anymore, I can't be that because I'm still here. And so that is true of absolutely every experience within Maya. There's a constant flux of change. And at the same time, there's my own presence that's not coming and going. So that's direct, immediate knowledge, recognition.
So you never have the experience of the satyam without...
You can. You can, only, let me put it this way. In meditation, for instance, by totally withdrawing the mind into absolute quiescence, right, then your experience, even though that mind is going to be there, we say it's an ati, what we call an ati sukshma vritti. Mm-hmm. It's a vritti, it's very subtle, you know, but it doesn't have any content away from the subject. Other than the subject, there's no content there. And so it, as though, has erased any extraneous content from itself. Right? And so then, the only experience is the self-experience. There's no subject-object experience at that time. Mm-hmm. So then you recognize, there's no subject-object, I'm self-shining. Then when the mind comes back, it's not that the mind wasn't there, but it was adi sukshma, right? Then when the mind comes back, what the mind recognizes that, I've come back and all this duality is now being experienced by me, and at the same time, I am not doing anything. Right? So, yeah.
But it's the same experience whether it's happening with, along with Maya appearance or...
Absolutely. That's what Brahmana realized. He was taught the Upanishads by some pundits. And he realized he didn't no need to meditate. My eyes are open and they're closed, I'm still the same. With my eyes open, it's Ishwara. These Namarupas are there, but it's me. My eyes are closed. It's still me. Open, closed. What difference does it make? I'm still me. Yeah. And so then he didn't meditate anymore because he realized there was never, he's always meditating. You know?
Well, this experience of changelessness and change, is there a qualitative difference between the two? I mean, they're both simultaneously taking place, and the change experience can stop, but the changeless persists, the experience does. But when they're simultaneously going on, is there a difference in experience of the two?
There is a difference because the mind can produce all kinds of emotions. The physical body has physical sensation, and there's experience going on, all of these coming and going experiences going on within Maya. But yourself is the stable substratum that is the very self of all of that experience. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, there is diversity of experience, tremendous diversity of experience. But what is the satyam of that diversity of experience? And that's what you need to...
Well, I guess the changing experience can stop or go away.
That exactly. Yeah. And it's not that it can.
It does.
It does. It all does.
So does that mean, so when the body dies,
yeah.
So that experience that I have now, I am,
will not waver.
I am.
Yeah, it won't waver in the slightest. That's why there absolutely is no death experience. The death experience doesn't exist. Mm. You will have a different venue, right, because you've dropped this body. But you know what? That won't even be word for you because you've done it an infinite number of times. It's just once you take this physical body, when you're in this physical body, you don't remember because you're identified with the physical brain and all. So you don't remember all of the in-between times for the transmigrating jiva. But from the standpoint of the jiva, transmigrating jiva, when you're not in a physical upadhi, you have a much longer memory, so they say. You know, this becomes just, you just see the whole sphere of, you know, all of your experiences that go over many, many different lifetimes. You know, when you're not in a physical embodied condition, when you're in a more of a subtle body condition. But even the subtle body is not contributing to the I am. The subtle body doesn't contribute to the I am me any more than the physical body. The I am is stable. That is Brahman, right? It doesn't waver at all. You don't even need a subtle body for it. You don't need the universe for it. Yeah.
So I mean, this meditative experience you talked about, I mean, from a sort of practical perspective, is it necessary or important to have that to actually gain knowledge?
Not really. Because what happens is we think about having some big samadhi experience that's been brought over from yoga, but actually, when teaching takes place, at those times that you see, right, the unfoldment is taking place and suddenly you see it in your mind, that's the aparoksha jnanam. That's when you're seeing at that time. And then we do nididhyasana meditation in order to bring the mind back to that, you know, so that you get your mind gets used to it, starts coming into relationship with that fact that you've seen at the time of teaching. So actually, at the time of teaching, or Swamiji will kind of sometimes joke, you know, like how he says it is, you know, say somebody tells you a joke, you didn't really get it. And then you didn't get the joke, right? And then you're taking a shower, he'll go through, you're in the shower, and all of a sudden, you know, you start laughing because you got it, right? So teaching can be like that, too. It can be, you're seeing it at the time of teaching, and there's click, 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 where you see it's not, you get it, and you get it, and you get it. Those are the little nididhyasanas that are taking place at the time of teaching. Right? They're little mini samadhis in the sense that you see.
So it's like a moment of clarity. Or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. That's what it is. You know, and then nididhyasana slows all of that down and allows you just to see, be with yourself. Slow it all down. Slow the shravana down so that you can recognize yourself and come and the mind come into relationship with your being instead of just taking itself to be you. When the mind says, I am me, and the me is I, where it's just a total identification, then when the mind is happy, you're happy. When the mind is sad, you're sad. There's just one there. Instead of the mind recognizing its mityatva, coming into relationship with its adhishtana, the me, that is always the same. That is such a relief for the mind once it understands that.
Yeah. And I think also one of the biggest blessings for the mind is when you said that when the mind understands that what I'm looking for, I already am, I have always always claim that and I always will be that. It's such a blessing, it's such a relief for the mind. It's like moksha.
Yeah, and then when the mind gets lost out there, you just pull it home.
Mm.
Because of your knowledge. Your knowledge brings it back. Your understanding brings it back. It's not a belief or it's that brings it back. It's a knowing. You bring it back home and relax it. Say it's got all worked up or unconscious stuff is coming up and that gets the mind all into a state of pain, of one kind of pain or another. Then because of your knowledge, you know how to be with that. How to talk to it, how to be with it, and then how to bring it home to yourself.
What, without understanding, what is it? Is it spiritual bypassing to come back to oneself and see oneself without understanding what it is?
What I was saying about spiritual bypassing is when you don't want to deal with your problem. And so you just say, well, that's not real. Sometimes that isn't all you need to say. Sometimes all you need to say is, that's not real, that's not me, why are you bothering, forget it. That's enough. Because it's not catching you deeply. But there are other emotional problems and things that you don't want to deal with. And so you just try to push them off into the closet and say, well, that's not real anyway. But that's not resolving it. It's pushing it into the closet.
You can't hope it goes away?
You can hope it goes away. But it's one thing to just be able to, when some upset happens, to just say, no, I don't want to go there. Because there's nothing, it's not some big samskara that you're dealing with. You don't want to go there. It's not worth it. And your knowledge is enough just to bring your mind back. But there's other things that are deeper, that are emotional problems, hurts, or a way of being in the world in a way that creates problems. And then it's not enough to just say, oh, it's mitta anyway. You can say that, but then you'll just be dealing with the same hurt and the same problem over and over again because you're not dealing with it.
That differentiates spiritual bypassing. What would it be called when you don't have understanding, but you go into the moments of ananda through recognizing the changelessness of your being, but you don't understand it. You just get there through meditation or something.
Well, then you probably become hooked on meditation so that you can create that experience. But that's really just another samsara. It's more benign in a sense, but you're still like depending. You're still trying to create a situation so that you can have this experience that you don't know what it is. See what I mean? I mean, it's different to do nididhyasana or contemplate because you just enjoy being with yourself and you know what it is. That's one thing. But what if you're meditating or taking drugs or doing this or doing that in order to generate an experience. And that's all you know is that, if I do this, I can generate this experience. Well, that's samsara. That is what we do. You're just doing that in terms of meditating. By meditating, I can generate this experience. Somebody else could say, by eating ice cream, I can generate that experience. You're doing some action in order to generate an experience, and then when you stop doing the action, the experience goes away. That's the illusion, right? So that can give you some happiness and joy, just like any samsara can. So now on another level, if you have knowledge and you enjoy doing nididhyasana and bringing your, and then you know what you're doing. You know what the source of the ananda is, and you're just bringing your mind to sit with yourself, right? You're not looking to generate an experience that you don't know what causes it, but you just say, if I meditate, I'll be able to evoke this experience sometimes. Yeah, if I'm lucky, I can evoke that experience, and sometimes I evoke only a shallow experience, all of this. Is that clear what I'm
saying? Yes. I don't know why he asked the question, but the spiritual bypassing, I got confused.
Oh, yeah. Is that clear now?
Good. Yeah.
Good.
Good class. Good verse.
Yeah.